You can make great wine, but if you can't sell it, you're nowhere.
You know, I'm the guy that loves the cat piss descriptor.
To be a winemaker, you need to be a little bit crazy.
If we really do want to spend 20 hours a day here through harvest, why not have as much fun playing and doing as much different things as we can?
It's definitely different every single year.
We make a white Barbera, which is called Carica l'Asino, which, by the way, means load the donkey, and we don't know why.
We say, so drink the wine. That's kind of our motto here at Life Between the Vines. One of the cool things about wine, besides drinking it, is the people you drink it with. And the stories you hear and tell with wine all come together to make every bottle unique. Discovering and tasting wine shouldn't be a homework assignment. And we believe that the people who are closest to wine have the best stories. So open a bottle.
And welcome to podcast number 296. This week we feature Shirley Brooks and Eugenia Keegan, co-chairs for the 4th Annual Willamette Valley Pinot Noir Auction 2019. In 2017, we attended our first Willamette Valley Pinot Noir Auction, and it was a spectacular show. This event is for the trade and media in the wine industry, and this was the third time it was held. Willamette Valley winemakers gather to offer some of their finest Pinot Noir to auction while helping promote their industry in Oregon. Shirley Brooks, Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Elk Cove Vineyards, and Eugenia Keegan, Oregon General Manager for Jackson Family Wines, will be co-chairs for this year's auction. We recorded a phone interview just a couple of weeks ago to talk about the event as the April 6th auction deadline grows nearer. Well, we're doing a phone recording here today, and we're talking to winemakers in Portland, Oregon, for the Willamette Valley. And this is Shirley Brooks and Eugenia Keegan, correct?
Yes, correct.
Welcome to Life Between the Vines. Happy to have you both along here.
Thank you.
So primarily, we're going to be talking about the Willamette Valley Pinot Noir auction, and that happens in April, correct? What dates would that be?
April 5th and 6th in 2019.
Great. Oh, 2019. It's hard to hear that. We're almost at the end of the decade.
Yeah, right.
Who would have thought? And if I'm not mistaken, this is the third annual auction. Is that correct?
I want to say fourth. Yeah. I'll corroborate that. It's fourth, but, you know, you still, you know, pretty much in its infancy, you can lose track.
Yeah, I wouldn't think it'd be that hard to lose track. And this was really an amazing event last year. And from what I remember about it, you did quite a bit better than you did in 2017.
Yeah, we definitely did see an increase in participants and volume, taking in a little over 800,000.
That's a pretty amazing number. Wow.
Yeah, we were very excited about it. It was a very nice uptick from year two, with year one and two being somewhat steady. And you never quite know. They always say year three is the real challenge for an event, and it either makes it or breaks it. And we were very, very happy with the success of last year's auction.
That's great. And we're going to come back and talk about the 2019 auction in a few minutes, but I just want to talk a little bit about the both of you. And I'm going to go back and start with you, Shirley. Now, you're the Vice President of Sales and Marketing at Elk Cove Vineyards. Is that right?
That is correct.
And you're from Detroit originally.
Yes, I am. I'm born and raised in the Midwest. And, you know, through life, you know, happenstance, found myself moving to Oregon and living here in the mid-90s, and frankly was not, you know, if you would say, in the industry or at all, but kind of found myself living in the middle of wine country and really hadn't had it on my radar, although I was really interested in wines, had a fledgling, you know, interest in that growing up back in the Midwest, and found myself, you know, living in the middle of it. And career-wise, I was kind of in transition, had a sales background, and it really wasn't a planned career move. I just thought it would be fun to work at a winery until I figured out what I was going to do next. And once bitten, I fell in love with obviously the industry, but particularly the Oregon wine industry, which is such a unique and very strongly collaborative industry. And that's still true today, you know, 20 some years later.
I think it is truly that. It's an amazing business. And I think that probably goes back to the root of being farming and how farmers tend to work with each other.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that whole collaborative, you know, spirit. I mean, I'm fortunate. I work for one of the pioneers of the Oregon wine industry. The Campbell family, who are native Oregonians, have been farming here in the valley for five generations. And now two generations, you know, in grape growing. And, you know, it really is rooted in agriculture.
Right. That's where the wine is made, in the vineyard. That's what they say, right?
That's what they say.
Now, Eugenia, you've been in the business for a heck of a long time. We won't make that sound
thank you. Don't embarrass me, Ray.
I was really trying to find a way I could word that gracefully. It just came out.
I know. Over 40 years.
But, I mean, that's an impressive period of time. I've been doing what I do for 40 years, and I'm still 29, so you've got to be young.
Well, I'm not far behind you. I think I'll be 30 this year.
Very good. See, we've turned that around into something good. So what about you? Where are you from originally?
Northern California, born in Sonoma County and raised in the Bay Area. My grandfather had a vineyard. He's passed on, but it's still in the family in Russian River. So it's farming and not just grape farming, but all kinds of farming. I grew up, we were a prune orchard and hops and beans, and before my time, cattle. So it's been a natural to be near agriculture all my life.
And both of you, obviously, because you're from California, both of you did a tour through Napa and Sonoma, you know, kind of getting your history together, right?
25 years of winemaking in Sonoma and Napa. So, I put a few years in there.
Well, I'll defer to Eugenia on that one. I actually did not do a turn in Napa. I came directly to Oregon and sowed my oats, if you will, initially, not at Elko, but another, prominent winery in the valley, and kind of got started there and actually moved to Elko. I'm 18, now pushing on 19 years with the Campbell family.
Well, still, I mean, a good length of time. You know, I guess each one of you take a shot at how would you describe the Willamette Valley? I mean, I was there once and I thought it was just incredibly beautiful. But when you think about living there and making your living there, you know, how would you put that into words?
You want to take the first stab at it, Eugenia?
Yeah, it's kind of a dream. It's a dream life. The Willamette Valley is, as you say, beautiful. It is physically beautiful. It is wet here, and if you love trees and you love green trees, this is a spectacular place to be. If you want to wear your flip-flops all the time, this may not be your best bet. So it is physically absolutely stunning almost every day. And the wine industry here is, as Shirley said, unique. It is highly collaborative, and to your point, Ray, it's sort of us against Mother Nature, and I think that's been the DNA that's been brought by the pioneers and the more challenging vintages early on in Oregon, and that has supported this collaboration. But again, as Shirley says, it's here to this day, and it's here for new winemakers and young winemakers, and it's just a very special place to be. It's not just agricultural, of course, but it's near a thriving city of Portland, and it's just a truly wonderful place to live and work.
Yeah, I would add on to that I think one of the things that's obviously we're talking about wine and the wine industry and the agricultural aspects, but in terms of living here, I think one of the sort of blessings I often said in my early wine career as I traveled around the country, you know, obviously promoting Elkhove wines, but frankly, the Oregon region in general, was that I often told people it was the best kept secret on the West Coast. And you come out here, and I was joking that we eat and drink very well, but the beauty is also phenomenal, and it's not just you know, the Willamette Valley. We've got, you know, the ocean, of course, at the coast, and we've got the gorge heading east into the high desert. And it's just, you know, there's so many options that living here, for the most part, an hour or two's drive away and you're in a whole nother terrain.
So when you look at Oregon Pinot Noir, I'll just say actually Oregon wine in general, when did you notice yourselves that all of a sudden it was getting major attention nationally?
Maybe four years ago, maybe?
Yeah, you know, I feel like it's happened kind of in waves. Somewhat joke and say, you know, sideways put us on the map, even though, you know, it wasn't the Willamette Valley that it was targeting, but certainly driving Pinot Noir into people's consciousness. And then people investigating, obviously, I mean, we've hung our hat on Pinot Noir as a region in the Willamette Valley. So I think that started a groundswell as well. But I'd say Eugene is right. I mean, Oregon's hot right now and has been for, you know, a few years.
And that's because you guys are sincerely making great wines.
I would say that's exactly right. It is, to your point, people fall in love with Oregon wines before they have the opportunity to fall in love with Oregon. And the quality of wine is very high. And part of that is this collaboration. We don't learn in a vacuum. We learn together. And the new focus on Chardonnay is a great example of how we work together. There's a large group of winemakers who are just uber serious about getting this variety right. And right's a big word, I get that. But there's this constant collaboration, experimentation, and conversation that goes on amongst all of us with the idea that we all learn from everybody else's mistakes, everybody else's input and approach, everybody else's experience. And instead of learning at a snail's pace, since you only get one opportunity a year to do this, we learn collectively, and it really advances the ball very forward, very quickly.
Well, and just to echo her comments on that, I think one of the key factors about all of that collaboration and experimentation is that the driving force remains here about quality. That's the goal. Is maybe we're not going to be making boatloads of wine out of Oregon, but almost without exception, what you're going to get from Oregon will be of high quality.
What I'm seeing on my end is people are seeking out Oregon wines. It's not just seeking out Pinot Noir in general, but they're seeking out the wines that come from that area because there's a distinct difference between wines made in other parts of the West Coast. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. Yeah.
They're responding to the style that this climate offers us.
You know, Pinot Noir is such a special wine for people who are really crazy about wine in general. Those are those people, I guess, who've maybe gone a little further because it's a complex wine. There's nothing simple about it, but yet anybody can appreciate it. It's not like you need to be esoteric about it, right?
No, not at all. You can just enjoy the fact that it tastes good. You don't have to go any deeper than that it's just delicious.
Right, and I think, you know, the goal is, we want to make pleasurable wines. I mean, they should be enjoyed. And, you know, yes, your wine geeks may want to, like, delve into, you know, the very, you know, tiny details, but, you know, you don't have to. I've always said wine is meant to be drunk.
Exactly. Yeah. It's meant to be enjoyed, especially with friends. Have you seen a spike in tourism in Portland?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The growth. Yeah. Has been palpable.
Yeah, if you think we're cool, Willamette Valley and Willamette Valley Pinot Noir, if you think we're cool, yeah, Portland is cool. And there is a lot of tourism coming to Portland and coming to Willamette Valley as a destination, and both places in between and together. So it's worked together, which has been very nice.
And it's pretty easy to get to.
Nope. Yeah, I mean, unlike Napa or even parts of the Washington wine growing community, virtually 70% of Oregon's wineries are within an hour's drive of Portland, which obviously is the, you know, major hub in the state of Oregon. So pretty accessible.
I think the one thing for me from my experience going there, which I really enjoyed, was the Willamette Valley seems to retain more of still the rural feel to it, the farming feel to it. Would you say that's fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of that has been about, you know, protecting the inherent agricultural areas of the valley. It's allowed farming to remain the focus.
And not just grape farming. That's one of the things that's such a success here. The valley floor is just full of hazelnuts and hazelnuts with Nutella and the Turkish hazelnut market not being as robust is very, very vibrant. We've got cattle. We've got berries. It's just there's grass seed, forestry. So agriculture is really a big part of our economy. Nurseries. A lot of nurseries in Oregon. So there's a lot of agriculture that has worked together well, and it allows us to have these hillsides for the vineyards. It's been thoughtful as well, as Shirley said. It's been the people who work and live here who have worked through the legislature to put limits on the kind of growth that you can have here.
Especially, you know, with the agricultural areas being so close to a major urban area.
I kind of wonder about that, though. Do you have worries about sprawl, you know, coming in from Portland? I mean, obviously, it's a very, you know, it's a pretty wild area once you get outside of there. But you know, we've seen this happen with many cities where they grow so big so fast.
Well, that's, you know, that was something I think that was very a very big foresight of the early days and the pioneers in helping protect all this agricultural land with legislature to protect, you know, to instill urban growth boundaries. And that was really about preserving, you know, land for farming.
Yeah, in 1973, a group of the early pioneers helped the legislature. Actually, they first came to the pioneers and they put together Senate Bill 100, which preserves the hillsides for agriculture and lots of other pieces of that. And it's part of the of Oregon, the Constitution of Oregon. You don't just change it overnight. So it's not just about zoning. It's beyond zoning.
Yeah, the whole idea in the end is everybody caring for the land and trying to be, you know, to do the very best they can to keep it, that kind of thing. That was a really ridiculous statement on my part, but you got the idea.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Yeah, well,
but it also takes supply and demand. If these agricultural crops are a complete failure, then there would be a certain kind of pressure, particularly when it's this beautiful. So it's also important that the agricultural economy work in its favor. So you know, it takes more than just the desire to have it be this way.
Are the rules stringent when it comes to, you know, I come out there, I'd like to open a winery. You know, is it going to take me 5 years? Is it something that there's a certain amount of openness to it?
It's really simple, actually, more simple than most areas. Every piece of property is zoned, and you can either do that or you can't do that. So in your specific example, to put a winery on a piece of property, number one, it has to be ag, and number two, you have to have 15 acres of planted vineyard to qualify for a winery permit. And if you have met those two criteria, you're in. Away you go. So it's actually rather simple and less complicated than certainly Napa and Sonoma, where I've worked before. But if you can't do it, if it's a piece of property that says you can't put a winery there, you might as well go find another piece of property.
Yeah, yeah. Are you finding winemakers from other part of the country coming to Willamette Valley to start another part of their career?
What, daily, Shirley?
Yeah, right. I was going to say how many per day.
Yeah.
There's certainly a huge interest in from other wine producing regions, which I think have been there, but it's definitely been an uptick. Well, I mean, Eugenia would probably be able to comment, you know, about this more personally. About the you know other producers who have interest and have now put roots, so to speak, in Oregon as well.
Yep. I think you probably saw last week, Ray, that the Coppola family, the Francis Ford Coppola family, purchased a vineyard and winery up here. That's the latest. But you know, it's there is a lot of interest. There's land, there's affordable land, and we have proven that you can have a successful wine business in the Willamette Valley.
Yeah, an interesting thought, thinking about winemakers coming from Sonoma and Napa because of the restrictions and the expense down there. It's a terribly difficult place to live.
Yeah, ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
Right. Well, and California is not the only ones. I mean, the French have had an interest in Oregon now dating back to, I guess, just over 30 years, with Druin being the first to kind of put stake in Oregon dirt.
Interesting, too, to think about those pioneers, you know, because there's no guarantees.
Right.
And there is, all 50 states make wine. Wow. Really.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's talk about the auction itself, which we said is going to be in April 2019, which really isn't terribly far away.
Thanks, Ray.
No. Yeah. Yeah, that's I guess that's only about 6 months out.
Well, it's obviously a pretty major effort to do this, but let's talk about, first of all, this is an event that's for the trade and media only, correct?
Correct.
And the who benefits from that?
The Willamette Valley Wineries Association.
So the whole point is to be able to fund your association, to be able to grow, to be able to advertise, to be able to put money back into what you're doing.
That's exactly right. And this idea was first created by the Napa Valley in an event called Premier Napa Valley. And it took 20 years for the rest of us to catch on. But within 1 year, Sonoma, Walla Walla, and Oregon, all Willamette Valley, all started their own auctions to just this reason. So it's kind of funny that we all watched Napa for so long become so successful at this. But it is a really wonderful, it's sort of a full circle, if you will, because the trade is supporting us in getting these unique wines, but it is their money that with which they're supporting us that we are then putting into marketing, which helps move wine off their shelves and off their wine lists. So hopefully this is working full circle for everyone.
Yeah, and just to, add on to that, obviously is so many other regions taking a page out of Napa's playbook. I mean, they've done many things right and well, and so, there's a nod to that. And one of the things for our industry, the Willamette Valley in particular, is for the most part, we are a bunch of, very small producers who, in terms of getting the word out and making people understand that we're about quality and also learning about our region, it does take, marketing dollars to do that. And we needed to up that game. And that's one of the things that the auction has been really wonderful in allowing us to now, show our face to other parts of the country and, even some international exposure that funding to raise awareness about the amazing wines and the people in the region that Eugenia and I are lucky to live in. In all honesty, Eugenia is one of my dearest friends. And so, we have this opportunity to sort of co-chair this upcoming auction, and I couldn't imagine doing it other than with one of my buddies.
It makes it fun. This has made it really fun for the two of us to put the energy into it to make this work, because it's an excuse to hang out together, frankly.
Exactly. And drink great wine.
We're going to be in New York in January, and you can imagine how much fun we're planning on having.
I think that's the thing, is when you're planning an event and you have fun doing it and you're kind of loose about it, that's going to come across to everybody. And that's what makes a great event happen, where there's no, uptightness. It's like, let's do this. Let's have a good time.
Right. Yeah. Who doesn't want to be a part of that?
Yeah.
you nailed it. And that's part of what we want to do, is we want to create an annual party for the trade in the Willamette Valley. And we get to say thank you to each other.
That's an opportunity, as you say, to hang out, which you don't probably always get the chance to do.
No, particularly when they're not in their shops when we call on them on sales calls and things like that, they're bloody busy. And this is an opportunity for them to come here and relax and not have to be answering the phone and, you know, signing in the delivery guy. So it's a really fun time.
And just for our listeners to draw a bit of a picture, those who saw the video we did last year, winemakers are there with their barrels. They're pouring their wines at the auction. We go into the auction afterwards, and the bidding is very exciting. This is the kind of thing where people are sitting on the edge of their seat, and because you can walk away with a really good deal with some really great wine, and it's not a typical situation.
Absolutely. It's live. It's, you know, there is a bit of nervousness in the room and anticipation. Everyone's excited. So it's just lively. And of course, you know, there are some delicious wines being tasted as well.
And as I recall, most of these wines are going to deliver pretty quickly after the auction itself. There's no extreme waiting time. Am I right about that?
Yeah, a good portion of them are already in the bottle. You know, some winemakers bottle after sort of 9 or 10 months and others wait 16, 17. So these are either in the bottle or just going in the bottle. So delivery should come within 6 months at the latest, but really often within 2 months.
Shirley and Eugenia, thank you very much for taking the time. But before I let you both go, I want to get your web addresses so our listeners can find out who you are and maybe a little bit about you. So Shirley, could you give us your web address?
Absolutely. So it's Elk Cove Vineyards, and the web address is elkcove.com, elkcove.com.
And Eugenia?
Well, with Jackson Family Wines, we have a couple, but I'd love to send guests to one of our new properties called Grand Moraine Winery. So GRANMORAINE.com.
When did that open up?
2014.
Oh, okay.
We started making wine in 2013, and it's based on the Grand Moraine Vineyard, which we purchased in 2013, and really brilliant wines, but one of our new properties.
Excellent.
Newer properties.
One of the big things I want to compliment all of you folks in Willamette Valley for is what you've done for Pinot Noir, how you've raised awareness. Certainly, yes, Sideways started that off, but you're making some fantastic wines there, and I know a lot of people that love to buy wines from there. So thank you both for taking the time, and I hope you have a successful auction.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks. We look forward to seeing you in 2019.
Yep, just exactly what Shirley said. See you in April of 2019, and happy holidays. See you then.
Learn more by visiting WillametteWines.com.
Thanks for listening, and remember to like us on Facebook. Also, check out our YouTube channel.
Life Between the Vines is produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Theme song and original music written and recorded by Tim Dondarevo. Our host is Kay Paskoff. Our graphics and website specialist is Lawton Hall. Our web geek is Dan Gieschen. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2018.